Hi, welcome to the second video in the series for creative coding in Windows 8 using processing JavaScript. We're going to get into some fun right away on this next one. If your environment is set up, if you watched the first video on setting up your environment, this should all look pretty familiar. We're starting here. We've set up our width and height of what we want our sketch to be. We've then fixed its size, creating a background color. And then we have our draw loop, which is our animation engine. And we're drawing the background color. So if we were to run this, we'd simply be having the background color drawn again and again. Now, in the last lesson, we looked at creating an element on the screen. And here, in this case, we'll make a circle. The default fill is white. If we go ahead and we run this, this should look very familiar. It's what we hit last time. There's our white little circle here. But let's look at this and conceptually start making this into something serious now. We've been drawing a simple ellipse here, and we've kind of been cheating because we've been doing all our drawing code. We wanted one circle moving around, and that's what we did last time. We were instantly calling this draw command. Most languages are going to introduce this concept of classes and objects, and in processing it's no different. So let's not be doing our drawing there. Let's start creating a custom class that's going to handle our visual elements. So I'm going to create a class here. This is inside of my sketch again. This is my sketch PDE, which is my processing sketch, which gets compiled through JavaScript on my Windows 8 application. I'm going to create a class called Dot. Now this Dot class is going to be doing all the things I want it to do. In fact, for right now, let's go ahead and say this dot is going to have a lot of those properties that I've been looking for. So it's going to have an X property. I'm going to, instead of using an int this time, I'm going to say a float. Float just basically lets me start calculating fractions of this pixel as I want to do. So think of a float in that way. It lets me do things instead of saying put your X at 2, or you're at 2.135 or whatever, and that starts giving us a higher fidelity for our visual rendering. So I'm going to say a float of X. We're going to start it off at 0 for right now as we're defining it. We also had, when we were drawing our ellipse, we had these as global variables. They were variables that were kind of way up here, like width and height. And now we're making these local variables inside of our class. So whatever dot we create will have its own values for X and Y, because in this lesson we're going to have not just two or three dots, we're going to have a ton of dots all floating around the screen and creating this particle effect. So let's start off first by creating a class, dot, but these properties will be unique to this particular dot. So every dot will have its own X, will have its own Y. It's also going to have its own X speed and Y speed. Now, instead of typing X speed and Y speed all the time, I've personally gotten into the habit of just calling it VX and VY for our velocity X or velocity Y. Makes it easier as you're coding longer cases, and you'll probably see it in other people's sketches. So every dot will have its X and Y, which represents its position, its VX and VY properties, which will hold its velocities in those two directions. Now, every class is also going to have its own update function. We're going to have to call this update function, and we're basically going to tell the dot, draw yourself whenever I call this update function. Right now, we would simply say wherever your X position is, and you say this, which means you, the class I'm talking to. So whoever is holding this update function, you personally, to your X value, add whatever your velocity X is, add whatever your velocity Y is, right? Now, because this class exists in our sketch, it can go ahead and still query things, such as the boundary checking that we ended up last sketch with. We could go ahead and do our boundary checking. But before we do that, we would have it draw itself. So we would say, well, hold on. At this point, let's just have it calculate its position and location. And then we want to do its boundary checking, which looks just like we wrote in our last code. If this dot x is greater than the width, then this dot x is equal to width. And this dot vx this time is equal to negative 1. This is what we learned last time. And we do the same thing for y. And then we do it for the lower boundary checking as well. Just as we learned last time, it doesn't matter if your velocity is positive or negative, multiplying it by negative 1 in both cases will flip it to the other value. So if you're bigger than you should be, or if you're smaller than you should be, in both cases simply flip over the velocity and you'll create a bounce along that dimension. So here we're having each dot take care of its own positioning logic. So if we came all the way up here and we wanted to now create a dot class, and we'll call it dot, in our setup we would say, hey, dot is equal to a new dot. And that's how you create a class. So this first part will not visually look much more different from where we ended, but conceptually this is a very big concept to understand. It's kind of your first grown-up concept in programming here. Besides setting up your file, drawing to the screen, this is where you really start becoming a creative coder, by learning how to create these classes and thinking of these classes conceptually. So we've created this class called dot. We have a variable to one dot for right now. This dot, we're basically birthing it into existence on our setup file. This will allow us then in our draw command, let's move this so you guys can see it. So here's just our generic definition. In our draw command, let's kind of give this some value so we can see it. We would go ahead and we would say, well, for right now, let's color it in with red. We're also going to move this down in a little bit. So we're telling processing, whatever geometry I'm going to draw, paint it red or fill it red. Then let's go ahead and say dot dot update. Okay, so let's go ahead and test this out. Okay, let's debug it. And here we see the little dot bouncing around. So this looks very similar to where we ended again on our first sketch, but it's conceptually very different. This dot is now its own thing that we can create and reference as the creative. So we now, if we have one dot, we can now start creating a lot of dots. So let's look at how you hold references to an array of objects. Let's go back out to our code. Let's stop this. So once we have the concept of objects set up, let's start introducing the concept of arrays, or arrays of visual objects. In processing, you can set it up this way. We're going to do an array called dots, and then we're going to create an array sized for as many dots as we want to draw. Since that's a value we might want to change, let's go ahead and turn it into a variable called total dots. We'll start it off by just saying int total dots is equal to, we'll start it off with 10. Now once we have this as an array, we no longer need this main guy right here. we populate an array during the setup. So instead of creating this one dot, we're going to start using an array of dots. Since setup is called once, this is where we want to load up the array with dots. And we'll go ahead and create a for loop for that. We'll say for int I equals 0, while I is less than total dots, I plus plus. This will basically iterate for as many total dot values as we want. And every time we do that, we're going to create a local variable. We'll just call it d for now. So we're going to say d is equal to a new dot. Just as we saw before when we were doing one of them, we're doing the exact same thing, only we're now creating it inside of a for loop. We're making 10 individual dots with their own personalities, with their own properties. And instead of starting them off, putting them wherever we want, let's start making things a little bit more interesting. Let's use a random function. Now in creative coding, random is one of your best friends. Random is a great way to basically make it unpredictable for you. So you're saying, I'm going to create these 10 dots. Their exposition, instead of me telling you where I want it to go, like at 0 or 10, roll the dice basically. Random is saying, give me a random number from 0 to whatever that is. So the x position could be anywhere within our proper bounds. Same with the y position, could be anywhere within our proper bounds. We're going to do the same thing for its random, and for right now we're going to have it only be a positive number. Let's take this one piece at a time. We've just introduced classes, we're introducing this concept of local properties, their x and y's are being random, their x and y velocities, for right now, they're only going to be positive random. Once we get this working, we're going to see how we can change this to be either left or right. Because if the x is always positive, they're always going to be shooting off to the side of the screen and downward, right? So for right now, that's okay, just so we can fill up the properties. But this is the first thing we're going to fix once we get these 10 dots rendering. The most important thing, once you've created a individual dot, since you no longer have any global reference to any one dot, but you have them stored up there in this array or this collection, think of these square braces as kind of your bucket. You've created this bucket a bucket for dots, and it's called dots. So down here, we're going to put it in the bucket by saying dots I is equal to d. Again, programming concepts-wise, assuming you have a programming background or some experience, you should be able to read this, right? You have a for loop. Your I is going to be growing from 0 to whatever total dots is, in this case 10. So every time this engine cranks, I first is 0, and then it cranks to 1, then it cranks to 2. So you're creating a dot, you're setting properties on that dot, and then you're using the fact that I is growing from 0 to 9 to start saying in bucket number I, in this case in bucket number 0, it's pointing to this instance of D. Then the crank turns around, it creates a new dot, and then it says in bucket, and I also is growing every time it loops through that for loop, right? So the next time it cranks, I is now 1, and it's saying in bucket number 1, hold this D. It cranks again, creates a third new dot, it says in bucket number 2, this D. So doing it this way, we are both creating 10 dots as well as storing them in their own unique buckets so that we can reference for later. This is how the classes and arrays of classes work. This is what we've done for setup. Now let's come down in our draw function. Since our bucket of dots is up here, we can reference it in setup or in draw. So let's come back down to draw. And now let's start looping through that bucket to start drawing our objects. So here it's the same thing. We're going to say for int I is equal to 0, while I is less than total dots, I plus plus. We're creating a very common for loop. And we will say dots I, we're just saying the dot in this bucket, tell it to update its position. And now let's use that to draw the ellipse. So the dot in that bucket, pull out its x value, pull out its y value, and draw them with the same diameter. Let's go ahead, run it. We've written a lot of code without testing it, so let's see if it works. All right, so you'll see here that we have different buckets moving at different velocities. When we started off, they were all moving in this downward direction because their x velocity was positive and their y velocity was positive. But they all have the same update command. So they're all doing the same boundary checking on the same width and height. They all respond the same way when they hit a boundary, regardless of what their x, y, or velocities are. If you hit a wall, it's going to invert your boundary. So with these lines of code, we're able to create 10 balls all bouncing around. If we went back now, and this is where the magic starts coming in. If we change this up to 100 and we refreshed it, the exact same thing works. We will now have 100 balls all moving around. It's a little bit of a cheat that they all started moving in the same direction, so let's go ahead and start fixing that. Coming back to our code, here's how you would do it. Now, I don't want to just show you the code. Let me explain the concept here. Random, again, it's going to pull a number from any value. Now, if I did random 10, it can be anything from 0 to 9. If I do random 2, it's going to pick a number from 0 to 2, right? Now, what I want it to do, though, is I want it to go either left or right. So what you can do here is do random 2 minus 1.0. Now let me type it out and then really cement it onto you that this is a very important algorithm. You can change the numbers, but the concept has to be the same. If you want to pick a random number that's only positive, just do random, right? Random to whatever positive number. If you want it to be negative, double the number that you want and then subtract half from it. That will shift it down the number line. So if I want a number from negative 1 to positive 1, I would pick a number from 0 to 2 and then subtract 1 from it. That will shift our span of numbers through half the amount. So with this simple addition of random to 2 minus 1, some of our dots are going to start moving, are going to be born moving to the left, and some of them will be born moving to the right. Some of them will be born moving down the page with a positive VY. Some of them will randomly guess a number. Let's say they guess 0.5. After you subtract 1, it becomes negative 0.5. So some of them will go the other way. By simply adding this change, if we refresh it, we'll see that they're now moving in different directions. If I wanted to speed this up, I simply tweak the numbers, right? I can tweak it directly by, let's say I actually wanted it, and again, this number has to be twice the range. So if I wanted it to be from negative 5 pixels to positive 5 pixels, 5 is the main value I would want, and so here I'd have to double it. Again, I'll give you some time to look at the algorithm. Don't just copy it and type it out. The purpose of these lessons are to really teach you how the thinking behind this creative coding works. This is a key algorithm to understand how to create a span of negative to positive random numbers. Here, by having the value here and expanding it up here, again, refresh it, we'll see the circles will be going much faster. And all over in different areas. They don't all start uniform and then start bouncing. They all start moving in different directions. Good. Now let's start seeing what other kind of cool, funky things we can do. If we have this ability, right? If we have this ability, and let's slow them back down again, because we're going to want their speeds themselves to start getting a little wonky. Because right now, if we run it, they're all running at different speeds, Which is cool, right? If you've never creative coded before, even into the second lesson, you're creating this screen of particles. The particles are moving around, they're bouncing. You see life. Be proud of yourself if you've never done this already. This in itself is cool. But let's start making it more and more cool. One thing we can do right away is any given dot starts getting pretty predictable. It's always moving in this direction until it hits the corners, and then it'll invert its speed and then kind of move in that direction. But this is basically kind of billiard ball physics. Nothing's really changing. There's no other external forces. These look like, again, non-living things. If you wanted to make them feel like they were more interesting, more living, what we can start doing is in that update code, instead of just adding a fixed velocity to their position, let's start making the velocity itself move around with a little bit of randomness. So you never really know what their velocity is going to be at any given time. This is what it looks like. It sounds more complicated than it is. Let's get back to our code. Let's look at the dot class. Let's look at what we're doing here in its update. And here's what we're going to do. Right here we were saying, add your velocity. Before we add it, let's start put a little bit of craziness in here. We're going to say our VX, let's add so the exact same thing we did when we were initially giving it a velocity. We're now going to roll the dice, if you will, every single time we call the update. So it's constantly going to be picking a new velocity every single frame. Now, if we run this just as it is, it's going to be pretty pretty hectic. Now, this obviously looks a little bit different, but right now it's too chaotic. So let's start introducing some restraint back to the system. So we're going to add a bit of randomness to it, but then let's start dampening it by saying, and no matter where you are, start easing back down. All right, if I'm multiplying something constantly by 0.9, right, or by any fraction less than 1, it will constantly start trying to drag it down to 0, right? If I'm at 10, right, and I want to do the next step would be 9, the next step would be 8.1, right, and you'd start shrinking that down. So by introducing this, we add a little bit of chaos here, and then we add a little bit more of constraint back here by subduing it. So we're adding a force and then also adding a little bit of friction, adding a random force, adding a little bit of friction. And this allows it to start creating a slightly more compelling pattern. We're going to do this for both X and for Y. Then look at the code. Try and, by reading the code in your head, picture what's going to be going on. Now let's run it and test. So now we're seeing some particles, and we see that they actually start moving around more like bacteria or like little animals in the water. They're moving with the direction. They kind of change their mind. They loop around. And by this constantly dragging it down to zero, it doesn't allow any one force to build up too much, because since we're constantly randomly picking numbers, before adding drag, some of these, they were randomly guessing positive numbers a lot. So before they started guessing negative numbers, it had accumulated with no restraint. So that's why some of the particles were really getting crazy all over the place. This is a good combination of introducing chaos and restraint to start creating something that starts looking a little bit more physical, a little bit more organic in its shape. These are the types of things that look pretty cool. Now, if we, based on this value here, if we really, you know, instead of using a high fraction close to 1, that kind of makes it move through water, if you will, or air. If we were saying every update, regardless of what you're adding, add a lot of friction, and you add more friction by multiplying it by a smaller fraction. So it was at 9, which was making it nice and fluid. If we drop this down to, say, 6, and we refresh it, we're going to see that the particles look like they're moving through a much more thicker fluid. And because of that, they're not able to move that far because they're constantly trying to add a new velocity, but they're right away getting brought back to at least 60% power every single time, dragging them to zero. So this is where the fun stuff starts coming in on creative coding, is leveraging these numbers. There's no right answer for it. You'll start getting used to kind of levels of velocity, levels of restraint, and you'll really get a feel for the types of animations that are appealing to your eye or to whatever mood you're trying to create. But here's where it is. Normally, for my types of sketches, I like keeping them a little bit more fast and fluid. A lot less friction, and then we still get kind of this more wobbly effect. Now, if you're with me so far, you're going to be rewarded with a pretty cool processing trick. Again, what's happening is the background is getting blacked out, and then this frame is getting animated every single draw update. What would happen if we didn't black out the background, if we were just constantly drawing the red squares? Well, let's see. Test, debug, and compile. So if on my draw update, if I just comment this out to not draw the background, and I refresh, that starts looking cool. I'm sure you've probably seen this effect. You might have even wondered how that happened. This is what you're doing. You're basically, because you're not blacking out the background, you have this living pixel history of every circle you've drawn and everything like that. Now, it's easy to see here that we have these strokes, right, on the circle. And because we have, because each circle is filled out with a black stroke, we're kind of getting this dark, shadowy effect back here. If we cleared out the strokes, it would just become a big red mess. But we've left the strokes in, and here we can see the effects on that. Thank you, Windows 8. Let's come back. Now, we actually want something somewhere in the middle. So let's do this in our setup function, again, right up here. The very first thing we'll do is we will fill the background once with black. Okay, this is in our setup function, so the first time it'll be filled with black. But after that, let's see, was I using a background color? Oh yeah, I was already using the background color here, so I'd already created a color variable called background color, which was black, so let me do it right, or all my real developer friends will yell at me, so teaching you guys wrong. So here we go, using our background color, which is black. So setup, we will paint it black once. If we run it now, we won't start from white, we'll start from black, basically. But you'll see that they still create their trails because every draw update is no longer clearing the background. If this is the effect you want, well, you just figured out how to do it. But a lot of people want to create more of these trails, want to create more of their trails in their effect. So let's see how to do that. First, if you wanted to get rid of the strokes around the circles, simply type no stroke. Now, if sometimes you did want strokes and sometimes you didn't want strokes, this no stroke command, you'd most likely put it in your draw function, or maybe even down in your dot update based on what elements you're doing. For us, we're just saying all across the board, we'll say it one time under setup, no stroke, and it'll take off strokes until you tell it to put strokes back on. So if we say no stroke and we refresh, we'll see they're now just red lines. Once this fills up to red, of course, you won't see anything else. So now let's add some gracefulness to it. All this is happening because we're no longer drawing a background. Now, a background takes one color. If instead of drawing a background, though, we drew a rectangle, rect, and we're saying start at the upper left-hand corner and go for the width of the screen and go for the height of the screen. Once again, we're seeing by defining width and height in variables, it's really saving the day. And I want you to get filled not just with black, which is that, but actually, there's an even shorter way of doing it in processing. We can say fill all black, but with 25 for your alpha, or 25 for your transparency. By doing this, we're going to be having a quasi-opaque solid black. So it's a black that will darken stuff, but you can still see through it. Now these two little lines right here, let's get rid of background, which would have filled the background solid black. Here we're not filling the background anymore, but we are creating a quasi-opaque black and then drawing a background rectangle directly to basically, every time you're drawing, paint a film of quasi-opaque black to kind of darken what's come before it. Now, if you were just doing this, it would eventually blacken out your old drawing, right? But since we're going to do this in our draw update, it's going to create this night. Well, let's just see what it is. Let's see what it does. If I run this. Okay, I must have done something wrong. Oh, of course. Perfect example. Let's see. This is what went wrong. I created a fill command right here. It was actually working, but since I didn't also give it a different fill color here to say put it back to red, it was using the same black color for my background as well as all the circles again. So now, because remember, fill is cumulative. It will fill everything this color, rectangles or ellipses, until you give it a different fill color. Now you know. Let's refresh. Ooh, and now we start having this particle burn trail effect. You see that each circle now seems to be glowing and leaving this glowing blur behind it. A lot of people might think of it, if you're not into creative coding, you might not have had any idea how that happened. You might have thought it was something in the dot class, but it wasn't in the dot class at all. It was back in your rendering stack on the draw command. You're just drawing a black opaque film constantly. Based on how opaque you choose to make that film, and say if it went from 0 to 5, so drop it down and run it, we'll see that it's very, very see-through. So it takes a lot longer for it to fill up those ghosts of past draw frames around, so your trails would get a lot longer. That looks kind of cool. So we're almost done with this lesson. From lesson one to this, we've introduced a tremendous amount of concepts. We've introduced the objects, wrapping up expositions, Y positions, leveraging the draw commands this way, doing a background hack so that you can get these cool trails. We've also introduced how to work with random for both your position, your velocity, and then acceleration between velocity to get these really cool organic effects on screen. But the last thing we want to do on this kind of super lesson is introduce the world of color in processing, how to deal with color. Now, we've already been looking at color in general here when we would define a color on the spot, right? We'd define a color, and as we all know, red, green, blue, right? That's what these values here are. But let's finish this up with a little bit of frosting. Instead of having all the pixels be their own color, let's have the dots be the color of wherever they are on the screen. And here's what I mean. Let's introduce the first change. I'm going to create a float. Now, again, we were saying these are red, green, and blue, so this is how I would change the color. Let's say if I wanted to do a nice Windows 8 magenta. So if I did this, all I've done now is instead of doing fixed numbers here, I've created variables to store their numbers. These variables are being have a value set to them every single draw command, and I'm doing the fill right here. Now I could also, if I wanted to, put the fill right there. Since we're using the same values so far, this is kind of redundant, right? There isn't any reason for me to tell the screen every single time, fill it with the same color. But since we're going to be coloring every circle a different color in the next step, I'm moving the fill for inside my for loop so that every dot that's defining the ellipse will have a color unique to it. So if I rerun this, again, we should see magenta dots at this point, but not much else has changed. Okay, good. Now let's start making those RGB values dependent. Processing has this great function called map. And let's see how it works. So we basically are going to want to say, here's how we know what our dot x position is. And we're going to say whatever our x position is, and the function, we want to red to increase as it moves across the screen. So we could do basically wherever our x position is divided by your width will give us a percentage of 0 to 1. So if you've come from some of the other languages like Silverlight or like Flash, you would end up doing something like this. But processing has this great function called map. And it basically says, let me type it out, then we'll explain it. So it says whatever x is from the value, from the range of 0 to width, map it for me for the range from 0 to 255. Again, if you're new to processing, this function is a lifesaver. Whatever the value is that I'm looking at, figure out what its percentage range would be from 0 to width, and then map this to the range 0 to, or from this low to this high, right? In our case, we want from 0 to 255 because our color values go in RGB from 0 to 255. So this is going to, based on the X, if it's all the way to the edge of the screen, it's going to be 255. If it's all the way to the left-hand side of the screen, it's going to be 0. Right? We're going to do the exact same thing for height. And in this case, we'll map it to the G range. So wherever this dot's Y value is, map it from 0 to height, because that's where Z is physically, and then map it to the color range from 0 to 255, because that's the range I need for my colors. And then we're saying fill RGB. For blue, we're going to, and blue will just stay fixed. If we didn't do anything, if we didn't do any mapping, these would be white dots, of course, because we'd be sending 255, 255, 255. Here we want to make the R dependent on where you are on the X, the green dependent on where you are on the Y. We're setting the fill for that particular dot's position. We're updating its position to do boundary checking. And then we're finally drawing the ellipse using the color for that dot's position. If we run this now, and this is kind of the final part of the sketch, now this is pretty cool. We see a color range of very beautifully shifted colors. We see that all these particles that are up here, which would have a very high value for X and a very low value for Y, are basically turned on. R would be 255, green would be all the way down, right? And blue is always up. As we come back here, R would be all the way down to 0, green would also be all the way down to 0, and so everything's blue. As we move down the page, the green values increase. Let me get myself out of there. So you see all the way down here, the particles are now with blue and green all the way up, but red all the way down. And finally, as we move all the way across the page, red increases, green increases, and blue is already maxed out. So the particles as we get down to here would be down to 0. Now for me, this is what creative coding is really all about. It's one of the first things we have. We're putting things on the screen, we're playing around with math, we're playing with code, and we're experimenting. We're changing variables around, we're playing with colors, and you start creating these amazing experiences that you just don't get from instantiating off of templates or other things like this. I know we threw a lot at you with this lesson, but consider this true creative coding 101, right? We've gone through a lot of things. We have a lot more to cover in the subsequent lessons, but please spend time exploring every one of the lessons because they will continue to introduce new and important concepts. So I hope to see you again for the next sketch. Thanks.